ANZ Voices welcomes you to the Business of Bloodstock podcast with co-hosts Justin Darcy and Taylor Dyke.
Welcome to episode 17 of the Business of Bloodstock podcast, proudly sponsored by Jimmy R. Muller's Avesta Bloodstock. Joining myself, Justin Darcy, and co-host Taylor Dyke is Rachel Finlayson, who works in marketing communications at Vinery Stud, but also recently won the 2024 Inglis and Magic Millions Thoroughbred Stud Cutting Challenge. Rach, congratulations on the win, and thank you very much for joining us.
Thanks so much for having me. I think I'm still on a bit of a high from that win.
Look, one thing from that night I won't forget is your smile, both on the horse, before you jumped on, while you were on it, and of course after as well. It was something that certainly lit up the room anyway, but we'll talk about that a little bit later. First thing I want to ask is about your early career and how you actually got involved in the industry. I know your mum and dad, Kathy and John, were big supporters of you, and you've obviously always been into horses as well.
Yeah, that's right. I've always had horses in my life, grew up with them and lived on a farm, so was blessed there with that kind of upbringing. But I did go away to uni in Canberra and got an amazing job down there. I was down there for 6 and a bit years, but it was just the horses that I missed the most, so that drew me home a bit. There was not a lot of job opportunities in Scone, as a lot of people would know, and an admin job came up at Vinery Stud, so I applied. And then I got the phone call saying that they'd actually filled that position. But luckily for me, Melanie Caban was at Vinery at the time and knew mum and dad. So she said to me, I do have one question for you. Sorry we filled that position, but are you John and Kathy's daughter? And I said, yes. And she said, okay, well, you've got the job. We just don't know what it is yet. And then it grew from there.
So you mentioned you went to uni as well. Would you be able to tell us what you studied?
Yeah, I did a double degree. I did international studies and public relations. I thought I was going to be a diplomat with Spain. I learned Spanish and did a couple of exchanges. So my degree actually comes from 3 different countries. But yeah, it was just horses that drew me back. By about second year, I realized I wasn't going to go and live in Spain. So then that's when I picked up a little bit more of the marketing subjects and yeah, figured out that I was going to stay here.
And one thing that sort of stood out to me just then was you mentioned to us pre-call that first time you drove into Vinery was the first time you actually drove into a horse stud. That must be pretty daunting for someone, because obviously these farms are so immaculate and they're just absolutely gorgeous, so well maintained, and some of the horse flesh on that farm is so valuable. It's must be quite eye-opening driving into a place like this for the first time, knowing that this is where you're going to be working.
Yeah, 100%. And I just come straight from Canberra. So, you know, concrete jungle of a university to this pristine, you know, they had 3 full-time gardeners and it's just so beautiful. As soon as you have a bit of a rough patch, you just walk outside and it's fine, I find. So I'm really lucky there. But yeah, considering I grew up in Scone, I really hadn't had a lot to do with the thoroughbred studs. So just learning all the ins and outs of pedigrees was, yeah, a steep learning curve, but I was lucky. I come from a stock horse background, so the principles are the same, I think. So the foundations were there.
You said that the horses were what sort of brought you home and you come from a stock horse background. I know that the Finlayson name is one that's pretty synonymous with Polycross in New South Wales, and your family are pretty heavily involved. It's very rare to see a New South Wales squad team without the Finlayson name thrown in there somewhere. And obviously your family have represented the state a lot. And I guess like racing, it's sort of one of those sports where once you've got the bug, you can't really get rid of it. So could you explain that sport a little bit to people who might never have heard of it?
Yeah, funnily enough, I just had to explain to Peter that I wouldn't be at the Sunday parades because we had to go and play in the A grade final, which we won. Don't worry, Peter, we won it. But polocross often gets confused with polo, I think, but we are operating with different equipment. Our field's about a third the size of a polo field, for starters, and polocross is the king of the one-horse sports, so we only play one horse all weekend. They have to be ultra fit. It's usually 3 games, but sometimes 4 games for the weekend, so recovery is huge. And polo has quite a small hard ball and a long mallet. We have a very bouncy ball and a net, so there's lots of throwing, catching with your teammates. It's a lot of fun. God, it's addictive. And the horses are just so incredible. Lots of stop, turn, maneuverability. Their athleticism is so important in those horses. So I guess that sort of helped me a little bit with the cutting as well. my horse did a really cool turn on the weekend, and I got a little bit of a flashback to that black mare I was riding in the cutting challenge. So that was a bit of fun.
That's awesome. Yeah, it's a sport that's pretty heavily family orientated. It's a sport that you can play, you know, with family members and sort of get away for the weekend as a family. What do you love about sort of the atmosphere and the values and sort of things that the sport actually has and provides?
Yeah, 100%. Exactly what you said. It's not only our family that play, and kids can play as young as, I don't know, 5, 6, 7. And then, you know, your grandparents can be playing as well. They're actually, I think Golgong's having a carnival very shortly where they have a family comp, and your 6 players have to be all from the same family. So that's pretty cool. But it's not, yeah, like I said, it's not just your immediate family, but I'm from a really amazing club, and I'm sure everyone would say the same thing about their own clubs. Every weekend it's the same people. It's like a traveling family. Like on the weekend I had Toby with me, and I didn't know what he was going to do because I had to go play in the final. But obviously there was 7 different people that put their hands up to have him, and he was totally fine on the sidelines with them. So grateful to have that extra support network.
What was it initially about polo cross that made you want to go and play? I'm someone who has zero background nor knowledge of the sport. Taylor's definitely the expert in that area, but what was that made you actually want to go and play the sport?
Dad played. So I was a little kid running around at polo cross for as long as I can remember, and had to sit on the sidelines. Mum made us wait till we were 8 years old to play, which was just torture. I remember when we were finally allowed to play. It was amazing. I grew up doing pony club, which is just a lot slower. So when you're allowed to get out there with all your friends and go a bit faster, and it's just a lot of fun. It's the feeling of picking the ball up properly, and then as those skills develop, getting a bounce and getting it properly, and then even further, you might get a really cool pass from your friend and then maybe do an angle shot, you know, like as skills develop, it's kind of like a kid reaching milestones and stuff. Everything's so exciting. Feels like the first time. And again, like I've been playing for many, many years now, and like my horse did some really cool stuff on the weekend that I've never done before. And I was like, oh, you know, like it's still every time there's always something new that's pretty special.
I've definitely heard it be explained as a hereditary disease. It's one of those things that's in the family and you're sort of stuck with it for life.
Yeah. Oh, we're a special kind of mad too. Like Lewis was loading me up the other day with Toby, and he said, this is the sport that your mother plays. It's very labor intensive. And every time I'm packing or unpacking, I'm like, oh, he was so right.
Absolutely. It's a sport that's, as you said, predominantly played on Australian stock horses, but I guess we're sort of starting to see a growing number of off the track thoroughbreds being re-educated for the sport. Obviously we saw the Australian team a couple of weeks ago participate in an initiative where they were given 8 off the trackers to retrain for the sport in a short number of months. Mm-hmm. What do you love about the thoroughbred and their versatility and I guess their ability to have, you know, good careers after racing?
Funny you should mention the thoroughbreds, because on the weekend one of my number 3s was actually riding an off the track thoroughbred, and the commentator was going, oh, look at her go, the thoroughbred, they can't catch her. So one of the things that I think is really incredible about them in polo cross is that as soon as they get clear running, it's basically a goal. You know, you can't catch them. The stock horse, I've never ridden a straight thoroughbred on the polo cross field, but a lot of our heritage bred stock horses have thoroughbred through them, so gives us a bit of extra size and pace.
How important is it for the industry that we can retrain some of these thoroughbreds through these different careers? And I guess witnessing it when you're out there playing polo cross as well, is it special to see a thoroughbred go from racing to being able to do these things, you know, play polo cross, go eventing, show jumping, and even competing at the Olympics to a degree?
Yeah. Oh, I think it's so incredible for the thoroughbred industry to have a lot of different pathways for these horses, because there's only a certain amount of people that can retrain a horse for jumping, for example. And if the horse is not thriving at jumping, well, then what's next? So to be able to have polo cross as an outlet for off the trackers, I think is just going to help rehome so many more horses. And it's horses for courses, you know. I'm part of the King of the Rangers committee, and it's a stockman's challenge that happens in Murrundi every September. And this year we're going to have a thoroughbred training challenge. We don't want it to be a trainer's challenge, because the whole point of this is saying that anyone can retrain these horses. So we've got a few locals that have signed up to be part of it. And with the Stockman's Challenges, there's 6 different preliminary events. So it's basically all you need is an all-rounder, right? So to try and link off the track thoroughbreds with Stockman's Challenging, we're going to get our trainers to where they've got them for a month, essentially, which they're currently the trainers or the riders have their thoroughbreds right now. And then at the event, they're going to be doing a hack pattern, some cross-country jumps as well as show jumps, some sporting events. So pony clubbers can pick these horses up too. They'll be doing an obstacle course, which is like bridges and side passing, opening gates, going through muddy gullies, stuff like that, which is part of the Stockman's Challenging. And then we're going to see what the riders say as to whether or not we put a cattle work section in as well. We'll just see how their horses are going. We don't want to sort of throw them in the deep end if they're not ready for it. So that's just another outlet for off-the-track thoroughbreds. And I think if we can shine a light on all that these horses can do, it's only going to help the entire industry.
So you're on the challenge committee for the King of the Rangers Stockman's Challenge. How did you get involved with that? It sounds like it's a pretty interesting sort of event.
Yeah, it is. I started doing challenges in 2015, I think, and just got addicted. Again, it's got that traveling family aspect to it. All of the competitors, especially probably the long-term competitors, the better, you know, the ones that are normally winning it, they just took all the newbies under their wings. It was such a really great event as far as learning, teaching your horse, new training methods. So I really loved that and I just got hooked. My sister and I actually both do it. And through Stockman's Challenging, I've actually been able to sell a lot of horses, because by the time you put all of that training into a horse for the different events, they're just phenomenal. So that's how I got into challenging. As far as joining up for the committee, I probably didn't realize how much work was involved when I put my hand up, but the long-serving King of the Rangers committee had quite publicly said that they were on the way out and that there were going to be a lot of vacancies. So my sister and I talked each other into it, and now we're bloody knee-deep. So, but it's been really good. I think without the few that put their hands up, it probably the event would have folded. Yeah, if anyone's listening and wants to put their hand up for volunteer work, we need your help.
When is the event, and if people want to come along or get involved, how can they do that?
It's the last weekend in September, and it's up at Murundi. The Rosedale Horse Complex is what it's called. So I think this year it's the 27th to the 29th of September. The Thoroughbred Training Challenge is going to be on show each and every day, so the Friday, Saturday and Sunday. We'll just get each of our riders to do some demonstrations with their horses and talk about the training techniques earlier in the weekend, and then the final events, which will be the events I mentioned, hack, jumping, obstacle courses, etc. They'll be Saturday and Sunday. But if they want to come along, there's the King of the Rangers website, which is just kingoftherangers.com.au. Ticketing information is there. It's such a good family weekend out. There's, you know, dog high jump and a camp draft and a rodeo and live music, and it's quite a big event.
One thing I want to touch into now is a little bit about your work and about Vinery as well. Marketing is a interesting role, I feel, and it can sometimes be an undervalued asset to many businesses. Can you, especially in a like working for a stallion farm, how important is it to have someone in the role who is able to market their stallions essentially and bring in more mares for their stallions?
I think it's hugely valuable, especially now. I've been with Vinery for 10 years, and in that time I've watched our stud, as well as every single other stud around us, evolve that position. It's just getting so much more competitive now. I think everyone knows that there's a huge recency bias in the thoroughbred industry. You have to constantly remind people how good these stallions are, because there's, 13 first season sires retiring to the Hunter Valley alone every year. So it's very easy to get knocked off from being the fresh kid on the block or being the big name in town, as soon as one horse gets a group one winner, they forget the five that you had last week or, you know, whatever it was. You just have to constantly put it in front of people. So there's that recency bias that you have to constantly plug. But I think also it's a word of mouth thing. You'll see every single stud utilizes the quote from the best trainer thing in ads. And if you do, no one's reading it. And if you don't, you get noticed for not doing it. So that's frustrating. But yeah, I just think to stay current, you definitely need people in a marketing role if you're trying to sell stallion noms.
Especially what comes with the marketing role as well is working with ourselves occasionally, and that is the media. Do you get some sort of satisfaction at all when you do see adverts that come from you guys get placed in magazines like our own and put out there to the public audience? And occasionally these get posted on social media as well, and they get some good comments and cool bit of feedback and cool comments about the horse as well. There's got to be some level of satisfaction there too.
Yeah, 100%. Obviously, we are seeing it from the moment the photographer comes to do the shoot, and we're trying to get that one image that we know will go on a specific ad. And then we do a lot of design in-house, but sometimes we send it away to a designer. You know, even just for example, if we talk about Hawaii 5-0, we've recently had to start from scratch with that horse. We didn't have any photos on file. Using racing photos gets fairly old fairly quick. So we got a local photographer out. She got some really great stuff with him, but also we had to work with the designer to get his branding, like his logo, his font and everything like that. So to see it go from nothing to a complete product and then have it running across socials and in publications, it's a big job, it's huge, and it's so rewarding when you see the final product.
What are those first steps to actually coming up with those marketing campaigns for stallions? It's something that no doubt would have to be very particular and precise, because you really only get one chance to come up with that initial campaign of how do I stamp my stallion and what's this logo going to look like for my horse?
Yeah, that's right. There's no rebranding for a stallion. It's not like a company where you can just redesign your logo, because I guess the time frame's just not there, right? I think initially the big question is who are the owners and how much free reign are they going to let us have? And we've been really lucky there with all of our horses. That's been great. And I don't know how much of that is Peter just taking the reins and letting us go, or whether or not he has to mediate or not. But with Hawaii 5-0, it was great. We came up with he's got a wave logo. I don't know if you saw his hats at open day, but that was sort of the first time we had those out and about. Well, I mean, Hawaii 5-0, it's fairly obvious. We thought, oh, we don't want to be too kitschy, but the opportunity was there, not to be missed. So we used Jazz from Ziva Creative did the Ole Kirk font and brand mark. And then the Ole Kirk brand mark was used across his whole yearling campaign. It was just in the background really subtly, often behind his photos. And that was so handy because we were able to switch out a lot of the photos but just keep the brand mark in the background, and then immediately those ads were recognizable as being relevant to Ole Kirk. So that sort of directed us to get another brand mark for Hawaii, and we went from there. And first draft, they ticked it, so happy days.
Social media is arguably one of the most important marketing tools. How important do you feel it is, not just to Vinery, but to the industry as a whole, especially given the negative light it can sometimes receive?
Vinery is really lucky. Our social media audience is really supportive. I feel like a lot of them feel as though they have a connection to the stud. And I don't know if that's because of the nature of social media. You do a lot of behind the scenes stuff. You know, there's more touchy-feely moments, there's more background stories, they get a feel for the actual horses that live at Vinery, the people that look after the horses. So I think as far as the industry goes, using that tool to create positive feelings around the horse stud and show a realistic, portray realistically what goes on and the love that the staff have for horses. I mean, as if anyone is doing this job that doesn't love horses. Like, there's so much time and work that goes into it. So I think that nearly every farm, broodmare farm, little farm, whatever you want to say, I think nearly all of them would have Instagram at this point now. And it's becoming a tool that is just necessary to put a positive spin on everything that we do. I obviously, the backlash with Black Caviar recently was fairly solid. I don't think from a studs point of view, any of the comments were followers necessarily from the studs. I think a lot of that would have just been keyboard warriors that are disconnected. You know, like I think a lot of the people that, you know, like a lot of our followers would also follow Newgate, Coolmore, Alma Vale, whatever. So they'd be more informed, I think. Unfortunately, when stuff like that goes all over social media, you know, it's getting shared by Sky Racing, who have a huge following and, you know, media channels, and probably, you know, the Daily Telegraph and stuff. That's when we don't have control, because those are the people that aren't informed. So, yeah, as far as from Vinery's perspective, there's not a lot we can do about those keyboard warriors, because thankfully our own followers are not that negative and are more informed.
Speaking of that, how important do you think it is to let an audience in behind the scenes and to grow participation and interest in bloodstock and racing?
Yeah, hugely important. I think it's definitely needed in the industry. If people are constantly shown the care that these horses get, I mean, like we've already discussed, when I came into this industry, I had no idea about it. I was probably a bit of a skeptic myself. Stock horses are the best, blah, blah, blah. Yeah, there is no doubt in my mind that these horses get the best level of care that there is. I know they're checked round the clock and they've got on-call veterinary. I mean, I'm pregnant at the moment. It's easier to get a vet than it is to get a bloody doctor. But, yeah, I just think if you can constantly show the real action or activity that's going on, yeah, how could that be negative?
Now, I spoke with Dave White not too long ago, and he describes you as someone who certainly has a competitive edge. You're very particular in your job as well and what you do, which would naturally come with it, but describes you as simply a great country girl.
Can attest there's been a few suppliers that have mentioned my attention to detail. I don't know if they think it's a great thing at the end of the day or not, but I am particular. I'm so passionate about the Vinery brand. And when it's misused or misrepresented, I'm there straight away to jump on it. And obviously if someone's trying to distort my logo or use the wrong CMYK colours, I will find out and I will change it.
You're obviously very passionate about Vinery and you love the brand and you love where you work. We're not going to take any fence sitters for this one, but who is your favourite stallion? It can be past or present as well.
Oh, more than ready, obviously. Very difficult question. Can I put them into categories?
Absolutely.
Okay, to do any sort of photos with, Ole Kirk. Easy peasy. All Too Hard Nearly, because he's so easy to work with, but he is a little bit hard to get to prick his ears. I also love Exceedance because I helped name him. I took his breaker videos. I was at the sale where they bought him. Our breaker loved Exceedance immediately. So it was really cool to watch him come out and be a superstar. And then I do have a bit of a soft spot for Casino Prince. I think if you're going to cross him with a stock horse to try and breed a polycross horse, he's just a really lovely type for that.
It's funny you mentioned there about Exceedance wearing those Vinery colours and that he was one who had a lot to do with going through his early parts of his career and dominating the scene at three and winning some of those big Group 1 races. How special is that being part of that journey when you see these horses at such a young age and go through that process and to go all the way through and now you're standing them at stud and seeing their progeny race on the track, and not only that, but his progeny doing incredibly well.
Yeah, aren't they? And we've just heard that Dublin Downs aiming for the Coolmore, which would just be amazing. But no, it's really cool. That year, I did all the breaker reports. McCoy is now taken over doing that now that I'm part-time. But we had bought a bunch, I think four or five colts in syndicates that year, and Exceedance was the cheapie. So all the big boys got done first and Exceedance was the last to come through, and we were really watching what the breaker said about that line of colts, and Exceedance was the standout. Simon just absolutely loved him. And then of the fillies that year, there was this little Nakea filly, tiny. She didn't even go to the sales because they didn't think she was going to make what the owner wanted. And Simon picked her. He just loved her. He thought she was phenomenal. And those two horses turned out to be Exceedance and Marabi. So, I mean, Simon goes all right. He also broke in some already and called her as well. But, yeah, I mean, we had to – Exceedance had quite a big group of owners. So just going back and forwards with the naming and the registrations and I was fairly heavily involved the whole way through, which is just so much fun. And then, yeah, like I said, when they come out and start winning races and then the expectation grows and then he actually won the Coolmore and it's just – hard to believe at the time, that moment. It's such a high.
And it's that feeling of going through that with the guys you work with and the team that you've seen work with the horse as well. It's a special feeling. But speaking of working in a team and that team and being around that team environment, the Vinery team were there a couple of weeks ago at the Cutting Challenge, watching you aboard your cutting horse, as you mentioned. No doubt the adrenaline was pumping and being legged up aboard the horse. What were you sort of thinking?
Well, smooth and then some, wasn't she a mare? She was special, that horse. All of the people bar Emma, I think, that had competed in it in the past were there. So, well, it's Adam and Dave White were there, and Dave had been giving me some the whole time in the lead up. And I knew that they'd put a syndicate together to buy me in the cow cutter, which they eventually pulled out and didn't go hard enough for me. Their loss. It was really great having them on the sideline. There'd been a fair bit of ribbing in the lead up and telling me that I better win, and everyone from Vinery gets on the podium, so the pressure was on. Turns out Dave actually didn't get on the podium, so I beat him there as well. But it's always good. They're all very quick to come down and get the team photo with me afterwards, and Adam was there with his two beautiful girls, so it was a bit special.
One thing I loved, being in the middle of the lineup, there was also a bit of anticipation around from a couple of members in the crowd who were holding up signs, "Go Rach." You obviously had a cheer squad in the crowd as well.
Well, I'm a Scone local. I don't know if any of the other competitors were. I reckon I had half the crowd there cheering for me. It was pretty loud. And, yeah, Sarah definitely made the sign, which was had to be a one-off, I think. I don't think there was any other signs in the crowd, so that was a bit special.
And one thing I absolutely loved too was after myself and Charmaine obviously came up and had a chat to you after the cut, and Toby was sitting there with the trophy, building sandcastles with it. To have Toby there and involved and running around with the trophy after it must be a pretty special feeling as a mum.
Yeah, it was. It was really good. He was having a great night, I think. All the cousins were there too, thank God. We needed the extra babysitters, I think. But, it was a really good night. It was just done so well. Everyone keeps telling me, oh, you've probably got the cutting bug. And I definitely do. But I also have a very realistic idea of the fact that I'll never get that special mare again. I'll never be trained by Grant Quigley again. There was literally a media crew and red carpet, you know. Like, just trying to recreate that would only lead to disappointment, I think. The whole cutting crew that were there were just so supportive. Like, everyone that I spoke to gave me some sort of pointer or tip. And I think every other stud cutter would have had the same experience. At the beginning of the week, they were pushing us to go in, like, come into the cutting, watch a bit, blah, blah, blah. Stud cutters, come in and get the feel for it. And at the end of the week, all of us were there. Like, we just kept seeing each other. Like, we kept going back. And, like, it's quite a busy week for the likes of, you know, Barley Ward Thomas and stuff. So for them to make time for it shows how much they were really enjoying it. It's just done so well. I said to Trine afterwards, thank you so much for putting it on and all the hard work that you guys put in. At every point, it exceeded expectations. My initial training sessions with Grant were so valuable for me just as a horsewoman alone. I think I'll take a lot out of that. And then the training and media day that we did all together with Hunter Media Co there, that was a great day. There was a lot of really good banter back and forwards between the stud cutters, and we were getting trained by the likes of Todd Graham, who's one of the best in Australia. So, yeah, I think we were all fairly well aware of how lucky we were.
So will you be putting your hand up again next year?
Oh, I'd love to. I'd love to. But Vinery share it around. So I think they've already got someone earmarked for next year.
Look, we'll just move on to our last little bit here. It's just called Fast Five, where we just ask five fun questions just to get to know you a little bit more outside of the industry and, yeah, just get to now a little bit more about Rach Finlayson. So I'll kick off here. Rach, what's your favourite movie?
Oh, hard one. Crazy Stupid Love.
That's a good one. Do you prefer attending the country or city races?
City. Winery box at Randwick goes all right. Although I don't actually know. I'll change my answer. Scone Cup every day.
Speaking of the Winery box, Team ANZ are yet to receive an invite, just noting that. if you could have dinner with three people of your choice, absolutely anyone, past or present, who would they be and why?
David Attenborough, Barack Obama, and my gran who passed away.
Next one, what is your favourite cuisine?
Italian, probably. No, Mexican.
Mexican, beautiful. I love a good feed of Mexican. What is your favourite memory on a racetrack?
Oh, that one's easy. I was there, I think it was the Queen Elizabeth Day when it was nearly one of Winx's grand finales. We'd been there 2 weeks earlier. She won. This time I took my family. Anyway, she won it and they had the big Winx sign out on the track. And Harry and I got down right. We had members passes, I guess, but we got right down in the owner's area. And then somehow we basically waved goodbye to Peter. He was stuck behind the fence and I got down where the owners were and was out on the track. I don't know how, I just kind of was in the flow of people, right down with the mayor herself, and Chris was there, and it was so cool. The hype around that win was just unbelievable and I was in it.
That's phenomenal. But Rach, thank you so much for joining us tonight. It's been an absolute pleasure talking to you again. I'm pretty sure that smile hasn't been wiped off your face post that cut win. Thank you very much for letting us in on a little bit about your polycross career and, of course, Winery as well. We appreciate it, and we're sure that our listeners will as well.
No worries at all. Thanks for having me.